Welcome to the DNA Talks podcast, where we take on the mission of unlocking the code of your genetics. This season is all about you, upgrading your health, not just on the surface, but down to the root cause. Join us as your clinicians at the DNA Company investigate your DNA and beyond. The intention of this podcast is to enhance your lifestyle by changing what is in your control. This does not substitute the medical advice given by your personal doctor, therapist, and other healthcare professionals.
All right, well, welcome to DNA Talks. I'm Bryce Wild.
I'm Dr. Krista Kosterman.
And we are full on pleasure to have with us JP Errico today here. And we're at the A4M 2023. It's an exciting show. We just got heavily schooled off camera on vagus stimulation. But before we get into that and the applications, I wanted to start off with your backstory, which is really interesting. Tell us, you know, sort of what industries, plural, you've come from, and then even how you stumbled across this incredible technology.
Thank you for the opportunity. My background is actually as an aeronautical engineer. I went to MIT. After that, I went to Duke Law School, which really took me away from the technology, and I missed it so much that I actually ended up doing a master's degree in mechanical engineering and material science while I was there. After that, I became a patent attorney for a relatively brief period of time, probably not more than about a year, because I was recruited by my uncle, who is a world-renowned spine surgeon, to help him develop the next generation of spine products, implants. And along the way, he introduced me to many of his colleagues, one of whom was a functional neurosurgeon who was doing deep brain stimulation to treat Parkinson's and essential tremor. And it was absolutely remarkable. It was the closest thing to magic I'd ever seen in the healthcare field. People who had Parkinson's disease were unable to control their movements with a simple electrical stimulation to certain areas of the brain, they were able to completely control that tremor, that motion, and go on to live completely normal lives with zero side effects. And I said I just wanted to be involved in that space, and so that led me into looking for the right thing to stimulate, and it turns out that the vagus nerve is exactly the right thing to stimulate.
Okay, so let's dive deeper into that momentarily. Before we do, let me just make this sort of delineation between what we're more familiar with in the world of Parkinson's, which is electrode implantation. You're talking about external stimulation.
Correct. But when we started, we were actually looking to do something percutaneous. Right. Because we were looking to treat, believe it or not, anaphylactic shock and asthma. And we actually did conduct clinical studies with a percutaneously placed lead in the neck with an external box where we would stimulate and treat people's asthma attacks. And these people were in the hospital because they had failed their medications at home. They had shown up at the emergency department, had spent at least 90 minutes sucking on that nebulized steroids and bronchodilators, not getting any benefit. And that was the point at which we began stimulating them. And we were able to reverse their attacks within seconds. It was absolutely remarkable.
That is remarkable. And, you know, I'll tell you, I'm an exercise-induced asthmatic. Mm-hmm. We're going to get to how that might actually help me a bit later on. You admittedly have a long list of allergies for which you are anaphylactoid or anaphylactic. So we want to know how this is going to help us. I want to know, first of all, I think everyone wants to know, what is this and how is this working? But before you even tell us about the science, sympathetic versus parasympathetic, rest and digest versus fight and flight. We've heard these terms. What does this really mean? How is it even impacting our...
Sure. Let's start with the autonomic nervous system. The autonomic nervous system controls all the things that you don't consciously think about. And even as humans who, you know, fly on jet planes to Disney World or download what they want to watch on the flight from Netflix, 99.9% of what actually happens in our lives is dictated by that autonomic nervous system and by just a few systems in our bodies. That would include your immune system and your cellular metabolism. So those three things together, your autonomic nervous system, cellular metabolism, and immune system, really control 99% of what your life is about. So when you're talking about the autonomic nervous system, it has two arms. As you said, the fight or flight mode, which is your sympathetic arm, and then the parasympathetic arm, which is really your vagus nerve, and that's your rest, digest, and restore mode. Now, we have to have balance between those two sides. And unfortunately, in Western society, most of what we live through with our stresses, our blue screens, our not getting enough sleep, our diet, not enough exercise, et cetera, are pushing us into a more sympathetically dominant state of fight or flight. And that's fine for short periods of time. But getting back out of that into what I refer to as parasympathetic recovery mode is critically important. And, you know, that involves, you know, ancient practices of breathing techniques and ice plunges and things like that. But vagus nerve stimulation is an incredibly easy way to drive yourself immediately back into that parasympathetic state that allows you to rest, digest, and restore.
It's not a replacement of some of these ancient technologies. It's a supplement too, or in cases where someone is not able to be in that space, support for.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of saying it. I liken it to, you can do 2 hours of meditation, or you can do 2 minutes of stimulation, and you can get the same benefits. And just to give you a little taste of what I mean by that, we actually did a small study in which we looked at the sympathetic state as represented by the tension in the muscles of the neck. So if you go to a chiropractor, for example, you know, one of the things they'll do is they'll palpate the muscles in your neck and your shoulders, and they'll sense how much stress you have. If it's very, very tense, it's going to be very difficult for them to do their adjustment and to manipulate you. What we showed is that within 5 minutes, we can reduce the tension in the neck muscles by 75 to 80%. By comparison, a full adjustment gets about 35%.
Wow.
Now, I'm not suggesting you don't go to the chiropractor. You want the adjustment, but you want the adjustment to hold. You want that to stick. We can help them do that. And that's just one of many things that we've
done. So I take a couple of seconds back into what you said. I have a high appreciation. I hold the concept of hormesis in high regard. You mentioned cold plunges. Small amount, let's call it the Goldilocks formula and the bell curve of the right amount of stimulation to activate. I always use this analogy of an elastic band where, you know, engaging sympathetic state is actually necessary, purposeful, the fight or flight. But how quickly can you snap back, if you will, into parasympathetic state? That's the elastic band. So by driving hormesis, the right amount of stressor, like an ice plunge, at any given time, the more you practice that, the better that malleability becomes within the elastic band. How does that concept potentially relate to what you're doing with this activation of the vagus nerve? Are you inducing a temporary state of hormesis, or are you?
No. Okay. No. What we're doing is, you're absolutely right. Hormesis is a wonderful model for how your body needs to be in balance. You need to be able to move into that fight or flight state. You need to be able to run away from a lion that's attacking you. And you need to be able to shift back into rest and digest mode and not spend the next 3 weeks panicked about the fact that you were chased by a lion. And so what we're doing is we're helping you move back into that rest and digest state. We're not preventing you from performing well in an athletic event. In fact, there's ample evidence to demonstrate that by stimulation, we can actually enhance your performance, you know, in things like putting in golf or free throw shooting in basketball or things like that, where you need to be able to concentrate. You need to be able to be relaxed and, you know, have your swing be fluid. We can help that, but we're not preventing you from, you know, making that tackle on the football field.
Right. Well, the body will naturally go from stressed to even more stressed. And that's not necessarily advantageous, but to go from a state of relaxed, focused attention, alertness, concentration, calm, parasympathetic state into stress is probably more advantageous.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And one of the things I like to, you made the analogy of being attacked in the jungle, but I like the analogy of a ship. You know, you've got a ship on the ocean that is, you know, going through huge waves, but that's not going to damage the ship. Ultimately, what's going to damage the ship is the salt. It's the salt that's going to, it's the slow and insidious stresses that get to us. And so I think in Western society, we have lots of stresses. The stresses that are most damaging are not the ones that are brief, acute, you know, large. It's the small stresses that sit beneath the surface that are slowly degrading you. And here's why I say that. The reason I say that is because you have physical stresses, emotional stresses, and mental stresses, and all of them have the capacity to upregulate sympathetic activity. That sympathetic activity doesn't distinguish between what type of threat there is. It does distinguish for how long you've been in that stress. And the longer you're in that stress, the longer that sympathetic activation will activate your immune system. It will degrade your metabolism. And it's those things that we want to shift back into parasympathetic recovery mode.
Yeah. When we do a lot of our movement behavior assessments, right, we talk about how sensitive people are to that initial stress, right? How do they perceive it? But more importantly, and this is where the conversation is often forgotten, right? We all talk about stress and how we respond to it. But the more interesting element of the conversation is, how do you gently come back to that state of rest, right? And based on several genes, there are many profiles out there that do not easily enable that. And so the person will have this incredible stress, and to an extent, they'll be stuck in that state for several days, even though in theory, they know cognitively they're safe, but the body hasn't registered that yet. And the body maintains that stressful signaling.
No, there's no question that every person is different with respect to their innate ability to be stress resilient. We can teach you things that you can do that will help you become more stress resilient. But being able to look at a genetic profile and say, hey, this person has all the genes and all the alleles necessary to be able to have a really high stress resilience is wonderful. But for the other person, you know, what do we do about this person who has some deficiencies? Can we amplify that by offering them a tool that drives them back into parasympathetic, even though they're not cognitively able to do it or you know, from their own autonomic nervous system?
Absolutely. Yeah. So you know, if you had your 360 test done and you are of that cognitive mood and behavioral predisposition to a slow COMT, a fast or otherwise, you know, high production of your adrenergic system, so you're looking at the ADRA2B gene, and on top of that, your 5-HTTLPR is of this short variation, so a double S, you're going to want to pay even more attention right now. Because, and you know, so this is the project. We're going to hear about that. You had this done off camera. What was your experience?
I did. So it's a very interesting experience. So they'll put a little bit of a conductor gel on it. And then once that is there, you place it just on your neck here. You've got to think of where your pulse will be. And you're going to very slowly increase the power to it. So at first it feels a little bit like a twinge. And then as the power increases, and this is kind of the sweet spot that you want to get to, there's a little bit of a lip drop. And at no point, I want to be plain, at no point was it uncomfortable, save and except for I was doing it in front of a bunch of people, and I was like, I think I'm going to start drooling.
So what happened there? What's exactly?
So it's exactly right. When you place the device on the neck over where the carotid artery is, because the vagus nerve runs in the same sheath that contains the carotid artery, you're activating the vagus nerve to fire at a certain frequency. And the frequency that this device provides is 25 hertz. Now, the brain is frequency coded. And what that means is that your brain has the ability to change its state based on how quickly those signals are coming in. And 25 hertz is the sweet spot. Because what it will do is it will cause the release of certain neurotransmitters, things like serotonin, things like norepinephrine, changes your dopamine levels so it can help with motivation. But most importantly, from my perspective, is the acetylcholine release. When acetylcholine is released, that's a neurotransmitter that interacts with the immune cells that are in your brain and in the rest of your body to downregulate them from an inflamed state into a non-inflamed state. And that's really important in the central nervous system, because your ability to produce things like melatonin, your ability to produce serotonin, are critically important to your ability to think clearly and to maintain a positive mood and to have positive sleep. All of those things can be maintained or enhanced with vagus nerve stimulation.
Primary customer, like who's the number one customer you're selling to that sees the most benefit?
I realize this is going to sound like a big audience, but we're trying to sell to people who are experiencing a lot of stress in their lives.
Okay.
Now, I figure that there's probably some Inuits somewhere who are not experiencing that, but for everyone else, this will help.
I would argue, you guys can disagree, obviously. I would argue that stress is probably North America's number one silent killer, and it probably trumps the big C cancer, cardiovascular disease, diabetes combined. That would be my argument.
Why do you see them separate?
I don't. Well, that's my point.
They're all the same thing.
Okay, so we're all in agreement. All right, so as we wrap here, let's come full circle to how somebody with exercise-induced asthma or somebody with a number of allergies that obviously induces the histaminic response. Why would we benefit? Because it's not always a stressful environment, or maybe it is, that I experience my asthma. And I know, because off camera, I can't remember if you explained to everybody, these trials initially started in an ambulatory ER, right? On asthma.
I think a lot of these devices have been dismissed as just stress management.
Right.
And yet here you are breaking out of that mold and saying, oh, there's more.
Well, this is a wellness product. But its sibling product is an FDA-cleared Class 2 prescription-only product with multiple approvals for the treatment of things including migraines, cluster headaches, and some other very severe forms of neurologic pain. It did have an emergency use authorization when that was still available for airway management in COVID. But what I would say is that stress and the consequences of stress to the immune system and to metabolism underlie everything from cancer and autoimmune disease and pain conditions and allergic conditions, and also really go to the fundamentals of aging. You know, whether you're a proponent of the antioxidant theory of aging or inflammaging or the metabolic theory of aging, or the most recent sort of contributor, which is information theory of aging, which I actually think is wonderful, beginning to synthesize everything together. I think what we're on the cusp of is a grand unified theory of aging. And what it's going to show is that all of these different theories are actually just aspects of one overarching theory of aging, and getting to understand how your genome is expressing the proteins that your body needs in order to function properly, which is what you do, and making certain that all of those systems are functioning properly by controlling the autonomic nervous system, which influences the immune system and influences your cellular health. That's what we do. So I think there's a natural synergy.
That makes so much sense. You just made me think of it. Maybe it's a new theory altogether. Time under stress credit. Like, we're probably born with a certain amount of that credit, time under stress, and we use that up, and we're probably shortly, at least within, you know, a certain amount of time, demise is pretty, demise is next up. Thank you so much. That was incredibly informing. Where can people learn more?
You can go to either truvega.com or you can go to jperico.com. I have blogs, I have web posts, I have lots of different information that people can benefit from. And we're actually very shortly going to be launching a program to deal specifically with stress. It's a 6-week program, where you'll do some exercises, you'll learn about vagus nerve stimulation, you'll learn about all of the other ancient techniques, things like deep breathing techniques and meditation and all those things, really to help people get themselves into that parasympathetic recovery mode at least for a few minutes every few hours. If you do that, that's really the sweet spot.
Awesome. Amazing. Until next time on the DNA Talks, over and out from the A4M 2023.